Happy Thursday, everybody. Glad you're with us. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN 2. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. All phone guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. As usual, I have swapped out one Golic for another. Mike Golic Jr. is back. Mike Golic Sr. on vacation.
Yep, tag. I'm in on this one. So we've rotated it nicely here. I am refreshed. I am revived. I am full of takes, Hal. So I am ready. I hope you are.
I was about to say, like, do you do the Stugatz thing when you go away for a few days? Like, you just, like, put a little folder together of all the things that you're not allowed to talk about and come bursting out of the gates with them all?
Yeah, it's essentially like my drafts on Twitter. I go back and I kind of look at the things that I either tweeted or didn't tweet in that, because you get backlogged a little bit. You get tingles when you got things in the world, the sports happening, that you don't have all of a sudden the platform to go and just gas bag about and convince myself that people actually care about my opinion. So it is tremendously difficult for me as I sat there in silence texting whoever I knew about whatever I could, and none of them responding nearly as well as you guys do here. So thank you for humoring me.
Well, anyway, we're glad you're back, and we are looking forward to – listen, we're getting to that sort of tipping point of sports actually returning. Major League Baseball is having people at their facilities now, and the bubble or the pre-bubble scenario is beginning to go in the NBA. The MLS, unfortunately, is having all kinds of issues in their bubble in terms of what the positive tests are with one team specifically, which we'll get into a little bit later. But as we're sort of beginning to start this whole thing in the NBA, the question now is, well, what would it mean? And we've had this discussion a couple of times. Again, all the teams will report to Orlando next week. 7th, 8th, and 9th will be the 3 days that the teams will stagger into the Disney World Resort. Our Brian Windhorst reporting yesterday that just to finish the season and do the playoffs, we're talking about $150 million investment by the NBA to make sure they can pull this thing off. So there is literally a lot on the line. In every way, shape, and form.
Yeah, and we've talked about the future money that's at stake with all of this for the league, and why as the restart was debated by some for a lot of reasons, for reasons that exist outside of the world of basketball, the reasons that exist in the world of social justice, why, all right, you can talk about wanting to not play the season because you think it detracts all that, but then we get into, all right, what happens with the CBA? What happens going forward for the NBA that's going to have to, like every league, try and salvage whatever you can of this year and then hope it spins into a world after a vaccine is created where you can return to some semblance of normalcy for the dollars and cents side of this thing?
Correct. So there's all sorts of things going on. And then there were the ideas that the NBA floated out, which not many of them, I think, took place, about how to sort of enhance someone who's not getting the home court advantage situation that they would have if they had the best record or one of the best records in one of the conferences, you know, the extra foul and all that kind of stuff. And a lot of that really sort of fell by the wayside. So the question then when that happened was, well, this is a little too gimmicky and how this is kind of stuff. And whoever does this and whoever going to run through this thing is going to sort of not be looked at as a real champion. Well, Giannis Antetokounmpo, the team, by the way, that still has the best odds to win this whole thing, in the Bucks press conference said, no. Whoever wins this year, they are a true champion.
Now, I've heard a lot of people say that, you know, there's going to be, how you guys say, the star next to this championship. I feel like at the end of the day, this is going to be the toughest, like, championship you could ever win, you know, because, like, the circumstances are really, really tough right now. So whoever wants it more is going to be able to go out there and take it.
I loved him until the old whoever wants it more.
Well, I like that Giannis, because he was working. Some of that was you saw the language barrier there. Yeah. He said what you guys call it, the star next to it, that he didn't know the asterisk was, but he did know enough about coming over here to know that if you just throw sports platitudes at us, man, oh man, we'll be like, yeah, exactly.
All right, so I have pretty strong opinion on this, but I'm not sure I know where you are. Do you think this championship in any way, shape, or form will be easier, harder, or what?
I don't think it'll be easier or harder. My contention for the asterisk always was, this is unprecedented. Like, you've got to distinguish this somehow, because what people are doing, whether you think it is more difficult situationally or not inside the bubble, as it pertains to the 2019-2020 NBA season, it's not even associated with that season anymore. I don't know how many players, coaches, former players and coaches we need to hear from to understand that what you did this year is essentially useless. So trying to say that the 2019-2020 NBA season happened and then there was a champion crowned, and to have it reflected in any history book in that way would be insane. So yeah, you throw an asterisk next to this and say, in the middle of this, a global pandemic hit, we essentially had a tournament that was entirely separate from the season and somebody won, and it was really hard. And all those things can be true.
It's a very interesting comp to the national championship game in college football, or the way it used to be. Because now with the playoff, at least there's a setup. But before, you would have, when it was the BCS National Championship game, your season would conclude when? End of November?
End of November, early December for the teams that had to play a conference championship game. And then you had about 41 days in between.
So a long stretch in between. So as you well know, and especially when we talk to football, the layoff, I think, is much more effective on the offensive side, sort of timing, rhythm, all that stuff, than the defensive side. So whatever your team was at the end of that time, really, it was it might be a completely different team sort of situation by the time you get around to playing that championship game.
It might be, and you have a chance to recover a lot of your depth and do all these things. And I've said it does. It creates a very interesting dynamic. But it creates that dynamic in a time period where you're around and your sole focus is football. And you're practicing, and you're getting a chance to get young guys reps in a lot of that. A lot of coaches view those bowl prep practices as spring practices for the following year, even if you're not going into a championship-style event like that. But the difference is, you're around and can do everything. These guys essentially had a three-month break.
Right. So now we're going into, and I understand that part of it. I think the cognitive dissonance between that season and what we're having here in this tournament is totally understandable. But the parameters in which they're working to win this championship, to me, are significantly more difficult than they would be in a regular NBA playoff run and an NBA championship, because they're not going anywhere. They're staying in the same place. Those 3 days in between games, or 2.5 days in between games sometimes in the same city, that ain't happening. And you're going to have to – I think it's going to be a much more difficult job mentally as well as physically for the coaches. We had Jeff Van Gundy on a couple of weeks ago, and that's basically what he said. How am I going to keep these guys all in at all times? I think that's going to be the most interesting part of this, whether or not these teams can stay mentally in this thing with the rapid-fire sort of pace that they'll be going at.
Yeah, and I agree with all of that. Like, an asterisk doesn't automatically mean bad. Like,
it
I think
kind of
well,
does,
but
though.
Like, we've let Major League Baseball do that to us, because we look at the asterisk and we automatically associate it with the steroid era, and we say, put him in the Hall of Fame and put a giant asterisk next to it. Yeah. Put a giant asterisk next to the Houston Astros championship. It's our way in baseball to kind of absolve some of the sins of the past while still acknowledging they happened. For me, an asterisk just says, this thing was different in a way we need to acknowledge.
Right.
And no one can debate that everything about this NBA season, the restart, and the tournament is different in a way that we need to historically acknowledge. So I just dispute what everyone looks at. Like, everyone who's asked a question about this asterisk is asked it under the guise that it's somehow lessening or cheapening what you do. This is going to be really hard, but it's going to be really different, and we need to know that.
And both those things are okay. And both those things can be true. The hard part with so many people on so many topics is it has to be one or the other. Both of those things can be true at the same time. Meanwhile, Frank Vogel, the Lakers head coach, who obviously has some ideas about winning a championship, was asked about Giannis's comments, and here's what he had to say.
If we're able, I don't know about other teams, but if we are able to come through all of this and achieve the ultimate prize, I do think it deserves a harder than ordinary asterisk if you're going to put an asterisk on it.
Sort of basically seen, you know what? Frank Vogel is Mike Golic Jr.
Matt, more or less, I am getting ready to coach the Lakers, which means I'm getting ready to get fitted for a ring. So this is a good time to be alive.
Congratulations. And all that on your first day back. What a time. All right, coming up next, and then there's the idea of keeping the bubble intact or just not bursting completely so a champion can be crowned. We'll hear from one NBA star who's like, yeah, there ain't no way this is going to be going the way they want it to. And the NBA mean to call foul on those violating the rules. We'll get to that next. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio and ESPN2. Glad you're with us, Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN2, presented by Progressive Insurance. All phone guests join us on the Shell Fence Zone Performance.
Imagine being so good at something, though, that you think that is possible.
Right? Well,
like,
I mean,
if I just want, I'm Giannis Antetokounmpo. If I just want this bad enough, I can go get it. And he's good enough to where I can't tell him that's wrong.
Did you want that national championship game against Alabama?
Yeah, but I'm not good enough to just want it and then go achieve it, right? Like, if Quentin Nelson wants something, he just goes out there and he steamrolls a person and he goes and gets it. I got to hope that Zach Martin's blocking well on the other end, that my right tackle's got my back next to me, that maybe that D lineman trips. Like, if Giannis wants something, he just drives to the basket and gets it, unless it's the Raptors in last year's playoffs. Then he runs into a brick wall, he gets bounced, and Kawhi Leonard gets the trophy. So if you run into a better guy who wants it more, then that's what we need. Just trial by NBA combat, one-on-one, and it will actually be who wants it more because these guys are that good.
Who wants it more? That's my favorite sports player of all time because it's just not true. All right, so we had a discussion earlier, and we're getting set for the bubble situation in the NBA, and then there are a lot of things that people need to pay attention to as the players begin to ascend to the Orlando campus resort / bubble on Walt Disney World. And they were documented in that 113-page, they call it a pamphlet. We call it something, something a little stronger than that. It was light reading. It was an actual book. And there are a lot of rules and regulations, man. And you're talking about guys anywhere from, 19 to 20 years old to 35, 36. And there's a lot of rules and regulations that they're going to have to follow if they want this thing to succeed. Well, Count Damian Lillard, who, by the way, had his doubts about going down there to begin with. Let's preface that and look it through the prism that it needs to be looked at. He had some doubts about going down there to begin with anyway. Let's just say in the Blazers press conference yesterday, his confidence level of everybody actually following the bubble rules, not great, Bob.
My confidence ain't great, honestly. My confidence ain't great because you telling me you're going to have, 22 teams full of players follow all the rules? Like, when we have 100% freedom, everybody don't follow all the rules. So, I don't have much confidence, but hopefully, it'll be handled to a point where, we're not putting everybody at risk or in a dangerous position.
It's so strange because we look at this and we, often say this is a league full of grown men and obviously they're going to go and expect to operate as professionals in this. And a lot will, but it is a league full of a lot of different personality types. Like you just mentioned, it reminds me, you have trust in all these guys in normal circumstances. But when we, so when I was in college, my last year at Notre Dame, we played in Dublin, Ireland against Navy in our first game. Right. We had 120 varying age, but college kids going over there. So we stayed at a hotel that was damn near on the countryside outside of Dublin. We had no shot of getting anywhere near downtown, anywhere near the Temple Bar District,
right,
anything like that. Because you had 120 plus kids in a foreign country trying to get ready to play a game. It was so that they said, we need to control every bit of this that we can and just get them in a place where they can do less damage. The problem is you're inside a bubble during a pandemic. So the damage, if it finds its way into you, is really the problem in all of this. And so that trust and all the links in that chain become more vital in this process.
Well, that's the thing, right? Are you going to find someone breaking the rules within the bubble? Or are you more likely to find someone trying to get outside the bubble in any way, shape, or form?
I guess that's the thing, is those two things are the same to me, because the minute you compromise the bubble, you have potentially brought the issues in.
And again, we've said it before, and I thought it was very astutely pointed out, it's not really a bubble, it's more like a mesh hat. I mean, you put a covering over it, but there are places where things can sort of weave in and weave out.
Yeah, honestly, that's the case, and so it is going to fall on everyone in there, and it's your confidence level in the various teams and all of this, because I was doing a bunch of phoners getting ready for the hot dog contest this coming weekend, which is not a phrase I thought I was going to get to say.
Congratulations, you've reached your Everest.
Yeah, that's all I've ever wanted.
Pretty good.
And so, now that I've found all I've ever wanted, it's amazing. People really want to talk about hot dogs, which I love. But in the midst of all the hot dog conversation, there were people asking about my confidence level in the NBA bubble the way we've always talked about. And the one thing I started thinking about was it's going to mean different things to different people to be in there. We talked about the investment in the first segment, what it is, the NBA $150 million having to go into just putting this on. So for some people, it's going to feel like that level of investment. For some people who think this is going to be a hard-fought championship, there shouldn't be an asterisk next to it, there's going to be a lot of people going overtime, the Bucks, the Lakers, the teams at the top that we think have a realistic chance of this. I worry about that first run of this where you're trying to play out the end of a regular season and set teams up for the playoffs, that as we go along in this and things crystallize, if it doesn't look like your team's actually going to make the playoffs, if you're one of those fringe playoff teams that might not feel great about taking on the Lakers or Bucks in the first round, is your focus as airtight? That's the area where I think you could see some of this early on, some of the difficulty before the teams that really know they're in this to win this lock in, make sure everything is buttoned up, and try and proceed accordingly.
A couple of parliamentary points of procedure here. I think it was our own Taylor Twellman who came up with the phrase mesh hat. So all due respect to him. We'll give him all the credit in the world because I'm going to need some strokes from him the next time we play. But secondly, that's the interesting thing, right? Like, you have teams that are just hanging on and may or may not get into that play-in game. Where is their level of buy-in for those final few games of the regular season that if they don't may affect the Bucks or the Clippers or the Lakers or the Celtics, who have way much more at stake in the potential to win this thing, because if they break the rules, there's a chance that the way things spread, because it's a virus, it's not like if you break your leg, you don't give your broken leg to somebody else, you do something wrong and you bring something into the bubble, even though you and your team may have no shot at it, you may actually give it to those people who actually do have a shot at it.
And that's the problem. It really is an all for one, all for all right. Situation inside this bubble. And so you can't afford that. But it's just like, I mean, how many times have we sat here and listened to my dad talk about on teams where, you know, at the end of a long season, if all of a sudden you're one of those teams that back doesn't up. Have a real playoff chance and you're knocked out in that situation, maybe it's, you know, you're going in and watching less film. Maybe it's, you know what? I won't go in and get that extra bit of treatment today.
Right.
Do all those things. You translate to this bubble and all of a sudden it's, all right, well, I could stay locked in my room and all this. I could stay where I'm supposed to be. But we're kind of out of this. We're probably going home in a week anyway. So maybe I'll see what's going on outside of the bubble. Maybe I'll invite somebody in. Like, if it loosens the reins in that way, you're not just talking about a team that might not go out there and perform that well. You're talking about potentially subverting everyone else's efforts.
And to that point of the prism for everyone's perspective, we played Damian Lillard, who, you know, they're not, you know, Trevor Ariza's not there. They're not sure how this is going to play out for them. Now listen to Kemba Walker and the Celtics, a team that a lot of people think can really surprise some people in the bubble format. Let's just say his view of the resumption of the season, way different.
I think everyone's situation obviously is just different. You know, obviously some guys have families and kids, wives, you know. For me, I'm a single man with no kids. So, I mean, I'm going to be fine, you know. All I do is stay in the house anyway, so it's nothing wrong with me just staying in my room, you know. So, yeah, I'll be fine, me personally. I'm fine. I'm actually looking forward to it just because I'm ready to play basketball.
And you hope that that's the route that some guys go in a lot of this. Like, again, I can only speak for me, like, as someone who is largely a hermit outside of the show, like, being able to go about this. I remember hearing about the NBA
hermit.
I remember hearing about the NBA bubble thing, and I went, you know what? Like, all things considered, not a huge departure from what my lifestyle is normally around here. So, all right, let's, you know, game on. Like Kemba said, let's get back to basketball. But for a lot of other people, especially now, like, it's also worth noting where we've been. Now, we're seeing a lot of places close down again because of the spikes in cases. Yeah. But we had been opening up. Guys had been home in summer vacation mode with their families, and places had been opening up around them largely. You had been used to a degree more of freedom, far more freedom, than you're going to get now retracting back and going inside this bubble.
Exactly right. So, and again, where you are and your perspective of where you think this thing will work depends on where you find yourself or you think you and your team may be ending up. And that's going to be the most interesting part of this thing going forward. So that's the situation with the NBA. Again, they're trying to finish. And then there's other teams and other sports, like the NFL, who's trying to start. And news came out yesterday that they're giving themselves the longest runway possible. And I'm here to tell you, that runway may get a little longer before it's all said and done. Golican Wingo with you, ESPN Radio, ESPN News, presented by Progressive Insurance. All phone guests, they joined us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Mike Golic Jr., Trey Wingo here. And I'm going to recreate the opening scene. Well, let me be clear. Parts of the opening scene. I'm forgetting Sarah Marshall. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about it.
Let's make sure we pick very clearly what parts.
As I said, we're not going to recreate. We're just going to use the dialogue. We're not going to actually recreate the scene.
There we go. We'll go with a table read. A table read for this one to start things off. Whoa, it's my first day back, man. Ease into it.
Welcome back, sweetie.
Oh, my God.
Let's talk about it, because it's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. And, of course, the news dropping yesterday that after the Hall of Fame game had been canceled and the Hall of Fame induction ceremony or enshrinement ceremony had been postponed, the NFL has now canceled or shortened the preseason, however you want to slice it. The first two preseason games As it stands right now, preseason week one will be August 20th through 24th. Preseason week two will be 27th through the 31st of August. And then again, the kickoff of the regular season still set to begin September 10th when the Chiefs host the Texans in just in the most delicious way that the NFL could just stick the knife in the Texans a little bit longer. Remember that 24-point lead at Arrowhead the last time you were here? Welcome back to Arrowhead on September 10th.
Remember all those trades you made this offseason? What if I told you it gets worse?
Yeah.
Welcome to the Chiefs Thunderdome.
What happened there? So this is not surprising on a couple of levels. Number one, this was something that the NFL had floated out before as part of a CBA and part of a training and part of an agreement that, look, we'll shorten preseason if you give us 18 regular season games and all that kind of stuff. So the idea that the NFL has been willing to sacrifice preseason games, it should not shock you in any way, shape, or form. In fact, I would argue, Mike, that this might be the new norm going forward, even out without it being a COVID-related issue. In fact, don't be surprised if last year was the last time we ever saw four preseason games.
Well, and I think that had been part of the mechanism that everyone expects to be triggered next year, where the owners can institute that 17-game regular season in 2021 and remove, at the time, I think it was just one preseason game. It was going to go to three preseason games, but people could look and like what they see here, because there are certain groups that have been clamoring this for a while, not even just on the ownership side, certainly the veteran players groups as well.
Listen, the players that are really needed for the four preseason games are the undrafted free agents, right? That's basically who these are for. The back, what, six, seven slots on your roster? Those are the people. That's the group that really needs those extra reps in those preseason games. And some quarterbacks have come out of this. Kurt Warner, Tony Romo. Those kind of quarterbacks are the ones that have really benefited from having all those reps in preseason to give them just enough of a glimpse to hang on and then find a way to eventually make it into the NFL. But all that being said, this is done with one specific purpose in place in 2020. Let's extend the runway as long as we possibly can, because this is all about one thing, because the NFL has said from day one, when all this came out, full steam ahead, business as usual. We'll do free agency when we normally do it. We'll do the draft, albeit differently than we normally do it. We did cancel the OTAs and the mini camps. We're not going to open training camps on time. All of this is done with one purpose in mind, to play a full regular season. And our own Ryan Clark on the 5 o'clock Sports Center yesterday gave his odds of that actually happening.
I don't think they should play a full season. I don't think we should be looking for a full season. I think it should be much like baseball has done, like basketball will do when they come back. And I know that we're in the middle of those seasons right now during the pandemic, and football will be different. But let's try to limit some of the contact. Let's try to put people at risk less if we possibly can. And I think that could be a move that the NFL could make. Also, if they come out right now and say they're going to play 12 games or 14 games, and then they're actually able to do that, then it's not a black eye to the league for trying to force their players to do too much.
So all of this is time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Do you believe that we'll see any preseason games?
I think so, just because I think in all of this, and we're seeing it in the NBA with, you know, then part of this is the playoff seeding, but also you've got regular season games. Like, I think before you get to the high stakes poker, you need a couple of hands to kind of warm this thing up, to try and go through, just if nothing else. Like, so much of preseason, you mentioned, is certainly about guys making the back end of rosters, but the reason you sort of dress up that third preseason game is just as much to go through the game day process, to get everyone acclimated with, this is how our team does business on game day, when we really ramp it up and treat this thing, because those are the weeks that you actually game plan during training camp. You'll actually try and go about it like you would, so the veteran players get that taste for their little bit of that game before you pull them out again in all of this. I think the difference in this year, in knowing your protocol going into a game of, all right, how are we going to have to do things in a COVID-19 world as we get ready to play a football game? People talk about football shape. It's just as much about football process in my mind. And I think you're going to need one crack at that before things get real, so that you don't have the potential for any number of things that can happen during a pandemic before a real life NFL football game that has meaning and value.
Couple of things. First and foremost, I have been a big believer in what my friend, my longtime friend and our longtime colleague here, Mark Schlereth, has always said about preseason. It may not count, but it matters. Like, there's no way to actually prepare for playing football to get ready to play football than by playing football. That's part of it, right? I mean, what does the quarterback always say? Well, I got that first hit. I feel good. Once I got that first hit, I knew I was in a game and everything was good to roll. So that's my longstanding belief, that you have to have some sort of warm-up, for lack of a better term. That being said, I would bet a lot of money that the grand total of preseason games we see in 2020 would be 0.00. Because the NFL is going to do whatever it needs to make sure that game, September 10th, Thursday night, Chiefs, Thunderdome, Texans, goes off as planned. And if they have to sacrifice two more preseason games to make sure everybody is good to go, that's exactly what's going to happen. Because we are, as we all said, it is a different year and a different time. The whole thing is to make sure the NFL season starts when it begins, and they are going to do whatever it takes to make sure that that game, not these two preseason games, that game starts on September 10th.
And I think you could still make that game start on September 10th, especially at least going through the first round of preseason games there, because you would then, in theory, have the time for any two-week quarantine period that you would need and all this. Now, I understand that would make it very difficult to game plan, so maybe there's something to that, but I think at some point, you're probably right. Like, we shouldn't be. Listen, everything's a 50-50 shot at this point. Like, you can convince me of any scenario for right. The NFL, and I'd say it would have value and possibility in all of this. But when I look at this, I just go, all right, like, what might actually work the best? That I'm not sure, because there could be something to learning how to go through all these procedures, not for the first time in scenarios. Like, forget, like, people are, like, the unfortunate side effect of this is people are going to get hurt, and probably a lot of them.
Yep.
Like, the downside on, like, everyone who is happy about this, NFL veterans who have hated training camp for a long time and don't think it's got nearly as much value as the length of time it takes up would necessitate in all that one. Defensive linemen, pumped, because they are going to be at a huge advantage to start this season. And I'd like to see if there's any I'm always curious at this, because I think since the last CBA, you've seen basically a preseason along offensive lines for the first 4 weeks of the season. Like, it is just a position that, as you remove time on the field getting ready for it, is going to suffer because it requires a lot more communication than almost anything else.
Correct.
In ways that are valuable.
It's the most collective unit on the field.
So stock up for defensive linemen. People are sad. Offensive line coach, late round draft picks and undrafted free agents, and athletic training staffs and hamstrings.
Yeah.
Like, we talk about soft tissue injuries, you add the violence of football to all that, and you're going to see it in droves through the first, you know, hopefully quarter. Like, the quarter of this season, that would be a blessing, but this has a chance to be ugly football. You just hope it's not ugly and even more destructive on the bodies involved in all this. Because, like, I saw those dates to come back to this, and you're talking about basically, what, like a little over a month preseason before you start doing stuff? And that's without having done anything up to it. Like, all the acclimatization stuff they're talking about is usually what takes place in OTAs. Like, training camp acclimatization is like, all right, we go out there for like one or two helmets practices, and then we go out there for like one or two practices and just shells and just shoulder pads without anything else. And then after that, you're clanging and banging. Like, I forget what the exact format is under the CBA, but it is not usually as long a runway as I have a feeling you're going to get this year, where at the beginning it is going to be, yeah, we're going to acclimatize how we do this hitting-wise and contact-wise for more than just the safety of players. Like, they're all going to be figuring out how the hell we social distance all these drills.
Well, listen, you weren't here the last couple of days, but I was texting with a current player, and I said, what do you think? And he goes, I think we start on time, and then we get together and all hell breaks loose. I mean, they are preparing for the scenario. Some players are preparing for, look, we'll get together, and then we've all sort of been doing our own thing for a while here, and I have no idea how this is going to work, and I have no idea how many of my teammates have been doing the proper things and staying away from certain spots, and because we're all coming in from different places of the country. And then again, you can't social distance and play this game. There's no way, shape, or form. So to me, what we're seeing here is a continuation of what's been going on the last couple of years anyway. What have we heard from coaches? You know what? Honestly, live practices with another team is probably better than a preseason game anyway. It gives us a lot of that same juice and that same rhythm that we would get out of a preseason game without all the other issues involved. That being said, we're not going to have that this year either. There will be no joint practice. They are doing everything they can to make sure nobody does anything more than that is the absolute minimum necessary to get to that first week. And I think that what we've seen the last few years in September anyway has sort of been a preseason, right? I mean, there are certain teams that come out and play pretty well, specifically the Patriots last year for the first two games when they beat up on Pittsburgh and then, what, throttled Miami 59 to nothing. And then the Ravens also had a really good start in that September season, but so many teams over the last couple of years anyway have really used the first couple of weeks of the regular season to get where they want to be anyway, and I just think that's going to be magnified this year.
Well, I think it's going to bury some teams in holes they can't come out of this year. Like, we talk about the Chiefs and all that. Like, you're bringing back essentially that entire team, depending on what happens with one player that we'll talk about here in a second. But when you, like, bring back those kind of groups and you're able to maybe put some distance between yourself and everybody else early because you do have continuity in a way. Like, that's why Tom Brady and Cam Newton and all these people are going out there and working out with their teammates in a way that forsakes anything, any NFL doctor will tell you is they know how far behind the eight ball they are relative to the Saints, relative to the Chiefs, relative to the Niners, and all these teams that bring back a cavalcade of talent that were successful last year. So that's why you're seeing all these people go, yeah, your rules don't mean a hell of a lot to me because at some point I still have to do my job and I don't know how well I'm going to be able to do it without all the stuff I'm used to.
Listen, you're 100% right, and I think that we're just going to have to accept that this year the September football may look a little cray-cray, may look a little crazy with sort of the things we see.
Like, this year we basically have to reserve, like, we cannot be griping about whatever sports product we get because we're working with a half-stock kitchen at this point, and that's being generous, and the entire thing is under attack at all times. Like you mentioned, it's going to start and then all hell is going to break loose. What we're seeing kind of with every league right now, everyone that started back up, is at some point you're going to get answers that you really don't like.
Yeah.
And short of, we got to fold this up and stop, what your response is going to be and how ready you are for that counterpunch is going to be the only way that any of these seasons have a chance of surviving.
Yeah, and so that's why I think everything is on this. Everything is on the table. Everything is on the, I literally, look, I could be wrong. I would be shocked if we see any preseason games this year going forward. And all of that is straight talk wireless, no contract, no compromise. All right, you mentioned veteran teams that are bringing almost everybody back. The Saints are certainly one of those teams. The 49ers, for the most part, are one of those teams. Kansas City Chiefs are definitely one of those teams. They almost have everybody coming back unless someone decides not to be there. And that would be defensive tackle Chris Jones, who yesterday in a USA Today article basically played his Le'Veon Bell card. He's like, I'm not going to play without a long-term deal. They have until, what, 10 days, 11 days now?
July 15th.
To get a long-term deal done. Otherwise, he's going to play under the franchise tag. And he basically said, I talked to Le'Veon Bell. Le'Veon Bell talked to me about it, said, I may play my Le'Veon Bell card and not play. Do you think he's going to go down that road?
I don't know Chris Jones well enough to know what he's going to do, but he is in the best position to maybe do this and not feel the drawback. Like, Le'Veon's whole point to do this was to do it and get paid and get a market-setting deal, which in some ways he did, but a lot of people think he left real money on the table. With everything we just talked about as the backdrop, with a global pandemic as the backdrop of the season, if you were going to tell me, Chris Jones, who is 26 years old right now, so he is, if we're looking at the criteria for this, he is young. Chris Jones, who is extremely productive in a spot that is increasingly gaining value in the NFL right now, and probably, I shouldn't say gaining value, but being valued in the NFL, thanks in large part to what guys like Aaron Donald have done over the course of this. And then, I guess in all of that, able to weather the storm in a lot of that, playing a position, and that's kind of tied into the last part, playing a position that is vital enough for people to still pay on the back end. And if we're seeing contracts handed out to guys like Grady Jarrett, certainly Aaron Donald's in his own stratosphere, it would reason to believe that if he sat this season, preserved his health for a year in one of the most uncertain years in NFL history, and came out on the other side, he's probably getting that $20-plus million a year contract long-term he's looking for.
Well, what's interesting here, you're right. Like, in a normal year, I think he would absolutely play, but in depending on what this happens, it may make actually be beneficial for him to sit this year out. But you mentioned Aaron Donald, right? So just so people understand, and if you watch the Super Bowl and their playoff run, when Chris Jones was on the field, they were a different defense. They absolutely were. Over the last two seasons, Chris Jones has 23.5 sacks when lined up as a defensive tackle, which trails only Aaron Donald. Jones has 72 pressures when lined up as a defensive tackle, which trails only Aaron Donald. He has a 20.4% pass rush win rate. Well, we need the sounder on that one. The pass rush win rate, which ranks third behind only Aaron Donald and Grady Jarrett. By the way, a win is when you beat your block within 2.5 seconds. It's an ESPN pass rush metric powered by Next Gen Stats. So we're talking about a guy who is that much of a difference maker. And what did he have, like 3 batted passes in the Super Bowl, specifically the one that set up the game-winning or the go-ahead score for the Kansas City Chiefs after they'd had the touchdown to make it close. And then they he batted down the ball on second down after the after the Niners ripped off 7 or 8 yards on first down. I mean, that's the kind of player we're talking about.
He's a great defensive player. Is he another, because the Chiefs already have and already paid Frank Clark to be your $20+ million a year defensive player? We have talked so much over the course of time about the difficulty of having a defensive player like that when you're also going to have to play a quarterback like that, and now to potentially have two of those guys in there. And I know the NFL Network was the first to report this, that Chris Jones viewed himself as a $20+ million a year guy.
Same.
And if the And if the Chiefs don't or can't, because that's two different things, like what their limits, they reworked Sammy Watkins' deal this offseason and certainly made some of that. But I think when you look at all that, you still don't have a lot of runway because of what you did. Like, you decided last year that Frank Clark was supposed to be your guy on defense.
And to be fair, while he had an up and down regular season, he was great in the postseason. I think he closed out all 3 games that they played with essentially a sack that sealed the game in Frank Clark. He did it against the Texans, he did it against the Titans, and he did it in the Super Bowl, which set up the last score, but that basically ended the game.
And with uncertainty around what the cap's going to look like next year, as we've talked about in a number of instances, and knowing paying Mahomes is your priority, keeping Tyreek Hill is probably more of a priority the way this league has gone, it might not just work out in Kansas City. Which is fine in all of this. The question is, are they going to get one more year of his services, you know, just over $16 million, or is he going to kind of look at this as a business proposition, like we've seen certain Major League Baseball players do, like we're seeing some NBA players do right now, and say, you know what, maybe it's better off for me to not go in a situation where soft tissue injuries are probably going to be up and all of this is going to be uncertain, and for everyone to say, all right, we've got this great guy who would be 27 years old then, who plays a, you know, a position that's becoming more of a premium position, and just let it fly next year.
By the way, here's Bill Barnwell, who does great work for us, and his columns on ESPN are always fantastic. He also does the Bill Barnwell Show podcast. He was on SportsCenter with Scott Van Pelt, basically lining up what you just said, Junior, how difficult it would be for the Chiefs right now to pay Chris Jones.
This is a guy who I thought was the Super Bowl MVP. He was that impactful in that second half comeback. But for Chris Jones, you look at the numbers, he does not actually stand out as a really significant defender. Look at the Chiefs defense when Chris Jones is on the field and Chris Jones is off the field. They have a better sack rate and a better pressure rate when Chris Jones is off the field, which doesn't really seem to make a lot of sense.
No.
Look at the running game. They average 5.3 yards per carry allowed when Chris Jones is on the football field. 4.3 yards per carry allowed when he's off the field. Teams do target him in the running game because he's someone who tries to get pressure at the quarterback, even if it means maybe losing a gap responsibility here or there. I think Chris Jones is a very talented football player. I think he can be a difference maker. But when you have Mahomes, when you have Tyreek Hill, when you have all these players who want significant sums of money, can you really afford to pay Chris Jones $20 million a year? I don't think the Chiefs can.
Well, that's the issue, because the Mahomes contract looms over all of this. Real quickly about the metrics and some of the things that Bill said, and he's right when you look at the numbers, but at the end of the day, sometimes the eye test matters, right? We saw the AFC Championship game the year before, which was at Arrowhead, and as soon as Chris Jones left the field, Tom Brady and the Patriots could do whatever they want in that situation, and that was a huge loss. So I understand what he's saying in terms of the metrics. Chris Jones is still a difference maker if you just watch the tape.
And there are other metrics I've seen that show that Chris Jones was actually a much improved and much more interested run defender over the course of last season. There are all these ways that you can stack it up. And you're right. The Chiefs team we talked about, the difference of 2018 when they didn't go on to do the things we expected them to do in the playoffs, and 2019 where they hoisted Lombardi, in some people's minds was, we said the defense needs to just go out there and not be 32nd in the league and not punt on this. And you go out in 2019, and listen, Tyrann Mathieu helped that out a lot. Frank Clark's late run, as you mentioned, talked about that a lot. And certainly Chris Jones was vital to all of that. But as you're looking at this, you've got to make decisions. And in my mind, they kind of made this decision last year. Like, once you traded for and handed Frank Clark that money, you knew you were going to make this difficult. And then a global pandemic heightened the nature of that.
Yes or no, does he play this year?
I'll say yes because $16 million is a lot to walk away from, but I think he's in the perfect position to say no, and I would love to see a player with a more valued position than running back try this out for real.
Right. I think it's an interesting test, and I think, like you said, I think he has the best case for it, but I still think it's hard for anybody to walk away from $16 million, especially a guy who's been hurt a little bit over the last couple of years. Golic and Wingo presented by Progressive Insurance. Quoting home insurance just got easier with Progressive's Home Quote Explorer. Quote and buy all online at progressive.com. Coming up next, the MLS may be wishing upon a star and having a nightmare come true. Oh, producer Evan is in his feelings right now. We'll get to that next. He's smiling right now on my Zoom app. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio and ESPN News.